We're talking about DMV wait times here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In recent years, wait times have been worsening depending on where you are in the state. The DMV fields thousands of calls each month, and more than a million people go to its service centers each year. Transportation officials have been working to improve their processes, and they have new numbers to report. What policies do you think would help your local DMV be more efficient? What's your experience been like at the DMV? We're at 800-642-1234. Christina Boardman oversees the Division of Motor Vehicles at the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Christina, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. So the DMV tracks customer wait times for service centers, for phone calls as well, and now for email. So let's first start with the service centers. The goal has been helping 80% of customers within 20 minutes. And the DMV has fallen short of this goal in each quarter last year. How has the agency been doing so far this year?
Well, in the first quarter of 2019, I'm proud to say that 81.7% of our customers were served in 20 minutes or less. So starting off the year in the right direction.
So what's going on there? What does that entail?
Well, admittedly, the first quarter, we probably have reduced traffic just due to weather. But we have a lot of data that we're working with, predictive analytics, trying to determine how many customers are going to be visiting each specific service center, in fact, what hour during the day. And we look at all that in advance and making sure that we're moving staff around the state so that we can appropriately respond.
So the DMV hasn't hired more people, or it's basically looking at these analytics to be able to gauge traffic, gauge demand.
Absolutely. Our first priority is to get our customers to go online and take advantage of many of those services. In general, customers only really need to come to a service center once every 8 years if they have a driver's license to renew it, because all of our vehicle transactions can be done online. But we know that some people need to come in, and we want to make sure that we're looking at that data so that we can appropriately respond and get people through that process very efficiently.
So how exactly do you keep track of customer wait times? How does that work?
About 85% of our customers are coming to our 30 full-service offices, and we provide queuing tickets. So when you come into the office, you'll check in at the information desk. You'll let us know what service you're there for, and we will give you a queuing ticket so that you can sit down and have a relaxed wait. And once we give you that ticket, we are tracking how long you are sitting there until we call you to the counter. And we want to make sure we keep track of the experience walking in the door to walk out. But most importantly, that waiting experience, sitting in our lobbies until we are servicing you.
So let's move on to phone calls. The DMV's goal is answering 80% of calls within 3 minutes. How is it doing there?
In 2019, right now, we're a little below the goal. We're at 70% for that first quarter of 2019. We get about 1.1 million calls a year. So we have a little bit of work to do there. We have made some changes with our phone center. As of last July, we have combined so that we have our communication center is handling both vehicles and driver's calls right out of the gate rather than queuing them separately. And we're also putting increased emphasis on email, because we know that people want answers in a timely manner on email. And if we're not responding to you, you're going to call us, and we don't want duplicative contacts. So we're keeping an eye on all of those things.
We're discussing DMV wait times with Christina Boardman. She oversees the Division of Motor Vehicles at the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. What questions do you have about DMV services? What's your experience been like? You can join in 800-642-1234. Let's look specifically at email. The DMV started tracking its response to email, and your agency has consistently been meeting the goals of answering them. Why did you start tracking responsiveness to email?
Well, we think to appropriately manage something, we need to measure it, and we need to do it to the public. So email has become increasingly more popular with our customers, and we are about 87% of those emails are answered in 24 hours or less. Many are answered, you know, the same day, and we are very cognizant of the fact that people want those answers timely, and if they're not getting them, they're going to either come into our service center or call. So we want to make sure that we're getting back to people right away.
So what is the breakdown there? How many people rely on service centers or phones to get help rather than use the internet?
In person per year, we see about 2 million customers. It can be about 165,000 a month. On the telephone, we are talking to about 1.1 million. So half as many people are calling. Email, we're answering about 20,000 emails a month. I don't have the numbers specifically for internet. We do know that a lot of people are taking advantage of those services, and it continues to grow. I think people just need to go to wisconsindmv.gov first and just check to see if the service that they're requiring is available online, because if we have the statutory authority to do it, we're going to make that available online so that it can be most convenient for customers.
Or perhaps the question that they have, the answer might be available online as well.
Absolutely. We have a very robust website, includes a lot of details, links to specific information. And so we understand people need to call or they need to come in, but yes, we very much hope that their first stop is always wisconsindmv.gov. An important thing that we've added online recently is that people can go if they're needing to renew their driver's license or an ID card. We have what's called a driver's license guide, and you can input your information. It can check some eligibility behind the scenes. It can print a checklist for you. You can even complete your application in advance and submit it electronically so you're not waiting for us to type it in. And you can make an appointment. So we offer a variety of appointments at these 30 full-time offices, and people can choose a time that's convenient for them. And when they get into the office, they're not even needing to do that wait. We can get them right to the counter.
Well, speaking of licenses and voter registration IDs, in March, the governor ordered the Department of Transportation to put together a plan that would expand DMV service center hours with the goal of increasing access to voter registration and IDs. Can you give us an update on what's going on there?
Sure. Our report is due by the end of this calendar year, so that we have a number of items that we're looking at. We are looking at our in-person customer traffic on those weeks adjacent to elections in the past to determine where we may need to adjust or increase service center rates. So we're looking at all that data. We're going to put together a proposed report, and we'll make sure that that's in well before the deadline.
Do you think that you could handle expanded hours right now at this point?
We do not have additional staff at this point, so expanded hours are a tricky topic, but we will definitely look for, you know, what is available to us, whether it's using overtime, et cetera, where those hours may most be needed. We don't want to increase hours just to increase them, but we are looking at the data to figure out where it most be needed, where customers have demonstrated that there's increased demand, and then we can respond accordingly.
So after becoming governor, Tony Evers pledged to make improving DMV wait times a priority. Really quickly here, do you think you're meeting his expectations?
I think we're starting off 2019 definitely in the right direction. We're doing a lot of things to keep an eye on the service center rates. We have a lot of data at our disposal, and we're making sure that we are using all of that data for all forms of communication to get out to our service centers. We follow up on things in a timely manner. We're looking at the data not just, you know, on the monthly basis, but on the daily basis, and we're adjusting as needed throughout the day to make sure that we can get customers in and out of our service centers.
Christina, thank you for joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Christina Boardman oversees the Division of Motor Vehicles at the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Coming up, bring on the berries. We'll get into the garden and talk with a fruit crop extension specialist about how to make the right growing conditions for our berry crops. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. Talking berry crops in Wisconsin. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. When you think of fruit grown in our state, you might immediately go to apples. The first commercial apple orchards were planted in the 1800s. But apples aren't the only fruit crop you can grow in your home garden. Consider the gooseberry, the sweet strawberry, the slightly temperamental blueberry, and of course, the ever-popular raspberry. Do you have a fruit garden, or are you growing fruit in pots? What have you planted? How are your plants doing? Did the heat wave hurt your berry plants? We're at 800-642-1234. Join in. Amaya Atucha is an assistant professor in the Department of Horticulture and the fruit crop specialist with the Division of Extension at UW-Madison. She's also the Gottschalk Chair for Cranberry Research. Amaya, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So what fruits are growing right now? What are we seeing out there?
You mean in terms of what we're harvesting at this point?
Yeah, sure. What are we trying to bring out of the garden right now?
Well, so we already had, you know, quite a bit of strawberries that were harvested. I think we started with the raspberries. Everything that is, you know, small berries, if you have currants or gooseberries, probably elderberries, juneberries are already being picked or ready to be picked. Blueberries are getting there as well.
Why is Wisconsin a good climate for growing all these types of berries?
Well, the good thing about these berries, and I think the reason why, you know, they grow so well in our climate is that they have sort of like a short period of growth. They're relatively small fruits when you compare it to an apple. It takes a long time to develop a big apple. So you can get these small fruits develop in, you know, a period of a month. Is the same is true for cherries. I mean, cherries, you need probably, you know, between 5 to 6 weeks, you can have a completely mature and ready to pick cherry. So that's one of the reasons. Also, we have pretty good rainfall, as we have experienced, maybe sometimes too much. So that also helps getting the plant started in spring. And all of these berries that we grow here are berries that are pretty good at withstanding, you know, the cold temperatures in the winter. That's where they are originally from northern parts of the world where it's cold. So I think that that's part of the success of growing these small berries.
Well, speaking of cold weather, that delayed strawberry picking this year, I understand growers anticipated late June for the season to get underway. How did the cold weather we saw, the polar vortex over the winter, how did that affect growers?
Yeah, I think that we saw the effect of the cold winter, you know, in multiple levels. So one of them, that overall, there was quite a bit of damage. So when I refer to damage, I mean, you know, limbs of trees that were completely dead, sometimes whole trees, new planted trees that were just did not make it. They never broke during the spring. They never grew. They were completely dead. That's part of it. And then everything that was done in terms of delay of bloom, so the flowering happened much later. Also, the spring, it took a little bit for it to really start. We had a lot of rain. I think overall that just delayed the entire process. Those two factors affected the fact that, you know, we didn't start as early as we would have wished for. But then on the other hand, a lot of this gets compensated. I think that the plants, as soon as it gets warm, they're able to compensate a little bit for this lag of development. And so even though that maybe we were a little bit behind, I think that overall, what I'm hearing from growers, we are kind of close to what happened last year.
We're talking about berry crops with Amaya Atucha. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Horticulture, and she's a fruit crop specialist. Do you have a fruit tree? What fruit does it grow? How long has it been growing fruit? Did you plant it yourself, or did you move to a home that was already growing it? Are you someone who's just learning to grow fruits? What's your question? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Chaz now, joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Chaz.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm calling because I've been trying to grow strawberries here in Sun Prairie in an urban environment. I started trying them in the garden and the rabbits got them. Lately, I've been trying to do them on my deck, both in hanging planters and in deck planters. I haven't been able to get much in the way of production. The plants are doing okay.
Chaz, thanks so much. Amaya, what should you do there if you're growing strawberries in pots?
Well, one of the things is, how do the plants look in terms of like, color? Do they look green? Do they look like they're actually growing and putting out, you know, runners and new leaves? If the plants are constrained in their development because you have them in pots, and maybe those pots, you know, get dry and the plants might be a little bit stressed and not completely developing, that would be one thing. Then the other thing is, depending on what variety you planted, it might just be that you're going to have to wait until next year to have a cultivar and it all have some fruit. And it all depends on when you actually started those seedlings. So those are the two things that I would look at, if whether you have a June berry or a day neutral berry, and it might just be that you will get some fruit next year.
Chaz, how do they look? Are they under any stress?
Asian beetles did a number on some of them, but not all. They are all doing runners very well, and they have produced some berries. Most of the plants are the day neutral plants.
So because they are a relatively new plant that you just planted this year, the yield that you're going to get from them is not going to be huge. So probably next year, when you take care of them, they overwinter them, next year you're going to have a much, much bigger production.
Chaz, thanks so much. Let's go to Cynthia in Waukesha. Cynthia, hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I have lived in this house since 1989, and we inherited a big, fairly large raspberry crop, raspberry bushes in the back. In the first few years we lived here, we used to get good-sized berries, but now our berries have dwindled in size, and they're just teeny tiny and really not good for much of anything except puree. I'm curious to know, should we be pruning those down almost to the ground in the fall?
Yes, that is a good question. I think part of the problem is that those canes are just getting too old, and you need renewal of material to get good high quality fruit. And so there are two types of berries. Berries that they will produce flowers only on the new shoots that are growing during the growing season, and they produce them in the fall. So we call it the fall bearing raspberries. And those usually what we do is after we have a crop, and before when you get into the fall, you would mow down all of the canes, and then the following spring you will have all these new canes coming from the ground with flowers to produce in the fall. The other type of raspberries that you have are the ones that produce in the summer and also produce in the fall. And the ones that produce in the summer, you have to overwinter some of the canes. So the canes that were produced the year before, they go through the winter, and then the following year, the following spring, they will have flowers in the spring. That's why they give you an earlier crop. So what I would do is I would prune down those canes this fall. After they had dropped all of their leaves, just prune them down to the ground. And the next year, basically, you're going to have a lot of new growth. And all of that growth is going to give you fruit in the fall of 2020.
Cynthia, does that help?
Well, I just want to clarify one thing. So our berries have only produced in the summer. We've usually pruned them in the fall to come down, you know, should we go all the way down on the branches that bore berries only and then leave the others up?
You could do that if you have, you know, if you want to selectively prune, that could help as well. Then you would have some fruit early on next summer. When I mean early on, I mean like June. Now, right now, we're starting to harvest the fall berries.
Yeah, we don't have fall berries. We just have berries that usually come in July.
If you don't prune them, if you prune them all, you will not have any fruit next year. You will just have a lot, maybe a little bit of fruit at the very end of the season. Mm-hmm. But if you selectively prune them and just remove some of them and leave others, then you will compensate and you will have some fruit on those canes still.
If we prune them all, the second season we would have some.
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, Cynthia, thank you for the call. And Amaya, just to clarify the timing for this cutting back and this pruning, when does that happen exactly in the fall?
So you want to wait until you have all the leaves that have fallen already. And so anytime around maybe November would be a good time. Late October, November is a good time to start pruning them. You also want all of the nutrients that those tissues have to be recycled and to be stored into, you know, organs that would store reserves for the following spring, like the trunk and the crown of the raspberry. So if you take them up too early, you don't give enough time for the plant to be able to recycle some of those nutrients. So that's why around November, early November, October is a good time to do the pruning.
We're talking about growing fruit here in Wisconsin and the berry harvest upon us. Strawberries, raspberries, blackberries, blueberries. Bring on your fruit crop questions. 800-642-1234. Amaya Atucha is our guide. She's a UW-Madison fruit crop extension specialist. Have you visited a strawberry or raspberry farm this summer? Where in Wisconsin did you go? How was the crop you picked? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up with your questions after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how to nurture our fruit plants. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for being here. Earlier this summer, strawberry farmers in Sauk and Columbia counties reported bumper harvest, the best in years, and apparently last winter's deep freeze had a role in fewer crop diseases and insects to contend with. But the deep freeze did a number on some cherry trees in the southeastern part of the state. Commercial fruit growers, have your crops, how have they been this season? Have insects or plant diseases been a problem for you? How does this summer compare to years past? Join in, 800-642-1234. UW-Madison fruit crop extension specialist Amaya Atucha stays with us. Amaya, Bob in Prairie du Chien couldn't stay with us, but he says he has a couple pear trees, and within the last month, they've dropped their leaves, appear to be dead. Bob asks, why is this happening? Is it because it's been such a wet season?
No, actually, that is probably the result of cold damage. So what happens many times we see these on trees is that we get damage to the roots in the winter and we don't see it. And so the plants still have enough to be able to put out leaves and new branches. But the moment that there's sometimes a crop or it starts getting really hot, the trees are not able to move enough water through their system. So what we call to transpire, that's the way that the plants are able to regulate their temperature, just as we transpire when we're hot. The plants transpire. That's one of the main reasons why we water plants, so that they're able to transpire. Although where the root system is damaged, they're not able to move enough water because they don't have enough roots, and that's when the tree collapses. And you see from one day to the other, it just starts dropping all the leaves and just dies.
Mm, so there's really nothing Bob could do with those pear trees then?
No, unfortunately nothing. Just replace them. So that might be one of the main reasons. It happens very suddenly. When you usually have a disease, you know, it's not from one day to another. There's some diseases that are very, very, you know, fast. In showing all their system, all their symptoms on the trees. But in general, you know, it takes a little while for it to spread all over to see something like a complete defoliation.
Let's go to Marcus now, joining us from Milwaukee. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning, Kate. So my comment is about mulberries. They're in season right now, and if you find them in Milwaukee, they actually have them growing in some of the medians. You just got to make sure to catch the berries when they're more like black or like a dark purple or navy, as opposed to like when they're more pink or red because they're not quite ripe. And when it comes to the raspberries, like if you have them in planters, one of the ways to keep birds away is you actually take plastic forks and you put it with the tongs facing up and you just stick a few into the pot and it'll keep most of the birds away.
Hmm. Marcus, how are you using those mulberries?
Making preserves, jellies and such, or else just a handful of them straight off the tree and just rinse them off, and they're delicious.
Well, thank you so much. Amaya, what about the forks?
What about the what?
The forks to keep the critters.
I have never heard of that one. But there's all sorts of ways to get the birds out. I remember at some point people were hanging CDs out of the cherry trees.
Right.
So yeah, it's just that people can be very original about how to get those birds out.
Do you see a lot of berries growing in medians and in places that are not in people's garden patch?
Well, I'm not in a global scale. Not so much here in Wisconsin, but I've seen on other states like in Minnesota, there's quite a bit of protection on high tunnels.
Mm.
And so that is something that some of the growers, we have a couple of growers up north around Oshkosh that they're growing blackberries actually on high tunnels. So there's some interest. It has a lot of benefits just because, it allows to have cleaner plants. You just take away the factor of the rain and that the spread of diseases. And you can also extend your growing season. You can start earlier because it's warmer and then you can continue later in the fall. So it's very appealing to grow them in these kind of protective environments.
Hmm, fascinating. Let's go to Matt now in Minocqua. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I've got a pretty good sized garden. I grow raspberries, blackberries, blueberries, and I just last summer planted some elderberries and don't know much about them, but they haven't produced any berries yet. I don't know, does it take a few years for those plants to get established before you get some berries, or should they be producing already? They're two-year-old plants.
Well, I'm not really familiar with that crop, but in general, I would say that you're correct. It takes at least one or two seasons for perennial plants to be able to establish. I think one of the exceptions could be probably strawberries, but it takes a little bit for those plants to be established and to be able to get those cues from the environment to start producing buds that will have flowers. So I would just wait a little bit more to see if you get some by next year.
Matt, thanks so much for the call. Amaya, let's take a moment here to explore the Japanese beetles. How can you tell if it's just a few bugs here and there or a true invasion on your plant?
Unfortunately, I'm not an expert on the insects. We have a food crop insect entomologist at UW-Madison. Her name is Dr. Christelle Gadeau. She's the one that covers all of this area of research and advice growers. But what I know from my experience on our research blogs, mostly with the grapes, is that it's so hard to predict when they're coming and what's going to happen. Every year is different. I've heard a lot of people saying, oh, we have this really cold winter and this winter is going to kill all of these insects. Well, from what I've learned from the entomologist, that's not the case. These insects are pretty resilient and they are able to withstand really cold temperatures. So when people were thinking that, when the plants are damaged, sure that the insects are going to be damaged as well. They just came out and we've seen them this year, maybe a little bit later than usual. But there's no way of predicting the amount, the populations and where they're coming from. Some of them are just living in your garden itself. Maybe they are overwintering in your grass. And so it's really hard to get a good sense of where they're coming from.
We're talking with Amaya Atucha. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. You can join in with your questions, your experiences with fruit crops this season, 800-642-1234. Do you buy fruit at farmers markets here in the state? How often do you buy fresh fruit? What do you think of the crop so far this year? Have you thought about starting a fruit garden? What do you want to know? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So in the summer, Amaya, how can you tell when it's too hot and your plant might be stressed from changes in temperature?
Mm-hmm. Well, you are going to see when a plant is stressed because of water stress, is that usually in the middle of the day when it's the hottest, you will see the leaves are going to start wilting. And so what's happening is that it's so hot that the plant is, as I said, not able to move enough water to be able to cool itself. So it shuts down the system and closes what we call the stomata. There are little openings in the leaves that are transpiring all this water. And so that's why the leaves will wilt a little bit. But then in the evening and at night, when the temperatures cool down and there's enough water in the soil, what the plant is going to do is going to be able to replenish all that water, and the leaves are going to stand up and be as normal, and they're going to look fine the following morning. So if your plant is not recovering over the night on those days that are really hot, it means that that plant is stressed. It might be that there's not enough water in the soil to be able to replenish all of that water for the plant. So that's one of the things that I always tell people to look. It's normal in a day that is really hot that the plant might wilt. What is not normal is that it's not recovering overnight.
Can you also give us the lowdown on fertilizer? When should we stop feeding fruit plants?
I think that, you know, one good estimate of when to finish is around this time, the end of July. So putting the last dose of fertilizers by the end of July. You don't want them to encourage more growth afterwards with fertilizer, because that is not going to allow the plant to start preparing for the winter and start hardening for the winter. And so by the end of July is just a good time. Most of the fruit is going to be developed. It might be just one last doses of fertilizer to help them have enough reserves to go through the winter, because that fruit is mostly already formed. So you're not going to have bigger or more fruit by fertilizing by the end of July.
And when you talk about fertilizer, what would you recommend? Do you fertilize for different types of berries?
Well, in general, most of the plants and the fruit crops, they need, you know, basic, the most important nutrients are nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And they are the most important because the plant uses them in really high quantities. And so there's not enough in the soil sometimes to be able to meet the demand that the plant has to produce this fruit. So we usually fertilize with those three nutrients, and they come in a mix in almost all fertilizers. There's some other types of nutrients, micronutrients we call them. They're nutrients that the plant still needs them, but they need them in very low quantities. So things like zinc and boron and magnesium are very important to be able to set fruit, to have fruits that look healthy and they're complete, they're not deformed fruit, and to have enough fruit. And those ones, we will usually put them early in the spring because we want to have them before the plant starts blooming.
And is this, go ahead.
No, please, go.
It fertilizing year after year, even in a garden plot that you fertilized last year for these same plants?
If you are having considerable amounts of fruit, you're harvesting a lot of fruit, you will have to fertilize every year.
Okay. We're talking about Wisconsin's fruit crops with Amaya Atucha as our guide. She's an assistant professor in the UW-Madison Horticulture Department. Do you buy fruit at farmers markets here in the state? How often do you buy fresh fruit? And what do you think of the crop this year? Have you thought about starting a fruit garden? What do you want to know? Have you visited a strawberry or raspberry farm this summer? Where did you go in our state? How was the crop that you picked? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we are learning all we can about our fruit crops and how to get good results for our apples and our cranberries, pears, all the berries. Wisconsin grows most of the cranberries in our country, and earlier this year, cranberry farmers said they were affected by this year's wet weather, but it would be too soon to project yields. Gardeners, how are your fruit plants doing right now? Are you having problems with your garden? What questions do you have? Do you have a fruit tree? How long has it been producing fruit? And did you plant it yourself? Join in. All questions asked and answered on fruit crops. Amaya Atucha is the fruit crop extension specialist at UW-Madison, and she stays with us. Amaya, how are those cranberries doing? I know that you have a lot of background in cranberry research.
Yeah, they're doing well. as you were saying, it's a little bit too early to estimate how much yield we're going to have. But overall, things are looking good. As with all of the other fruit crops, we had an extremely wet spring, which kind of delayed some of the things and might have produced a little bit more of a headache this year to the growers than in other years, trying to, you know, prevent some diseases and trying to control some of the insects. But you know, that happens every year. Every year is different. Every year we have something, whether it's cold, it's wet, or we have, you know, some new invasive species, or we have hail. And so the growers, I mean, they are incredible in the sense that they are able to cope with all of these problems and find solutions and still be able to have really good yields and really good fruit.
So in terms of growing our fruit trees, what should we be doing this time of year? How should we be caring for them?
So this time of the year, very important, we already talked about this, is like even when we think about how wet we usually are, just to make sure that the plants are not stressed. When we have periods of maybe a week, we don't have any rain, just checking on the plants, maybe supplying a little bit of water. The other thing is to make sure that we just don't drop the ball. We're trying to control some of the insects, and if we have any diseases, it's really important, again, to be able to have these plants going to the winter in a healthy, good stage, not stressed, so that we won't see any cold damage the following spring. So just keep up your, you know, control of insects and diseases so that the plants still have a healthy, good foliage, and that would allow them to produce enough sugars and making a photosynthesis so that they have good reserves for the winter.
So we have an email here from someone who says they're trying to grow edible passiflora. That's the passion fruit flower. And they have this indoor plant, summer indoor-outdoor plant. What advice or any varietal suggestions would you have here?
I don't have any, really, because it's not something that we grow in this kind of climate. These are very obscure questions. So I would just, you know, some of the things that I recommend when people ask me things that I don't know is the best way to find reliable information is to go online and try to find information that is coming from an extension program at a university. Those are the most reliable sources of information. You're usually going to find something like passiflora on places where they have more of a tropical climate. So if you find something from the University of Florida, maybe you will probably find somebody's growing those crops down there. Here, I mean, it's very difficult, almost impossible to try to grow those things.
Kind of have a mix up there in the zones. So, you know, we see discounted plants this time of year. Is it worth buying a fruit plant right now, or is it too late?
Well, you could still, we still have a window to, especially for trees. If you want to plant some trees, you can still plant them in the fall. If you want to plant some apple trees, you can plant them in the fall. It's tricky because one of the things that happen is that you having this new tree that you just established and probably doesn't have enough roots in the spot where you planted it, and you're just right away putting it into the winter. So sometimes trees are able to establish in a short period of time when you plant them in the fall and survive. Many, many commercial growers, apple growers actually, sometimes they plant in the fall because it's so hard to plant in the spring because it's so wet. But our usual timing for establishing any fruit crop is always in the spring. But if you have some trees and you get them at a good price, yeah, you could just go ahead and give it a try and establish them in the fall.
Well, our colleague here at WPR, your dear friend Larry Mueller, it likes to grow limey indoors. How about growing fruit indoors? What would you suggest?
Well, the most important thing is to have a proper source of light in the winter. I think that's what stresses them the most. It's fine to grow them indoors if you're supplying water, if you're supplying the nutrients that they need. I think that the part of the winter that is the most challenging one is that we don't have enough light for a lot of those tropical, subtropical fruit crops like, you know, any citrus. And that they are evergreen. That means that they have their leaves all year long. So they have to be well illuminated to make sure that they are able to survive during the winter.
So you're having these artificial lights directly on them?
Yes.
Okay. For most of the day, some of the day?
I would say that if you provide them with light around 8 to 10 hours,
okay.
during the winter in a day, that would be enough. The quality of the life is the, of the type of light that you're using is also important, but there's all sorts of information that you, and bulletins about growing them indoors. And so this is something that is easier to find on the internet, information about the types of light that you should be using.
Well, let's look at the start of apple and grape season. What should we anticipate there for the season looking forward for apples?
Well, we had a kind of like a rocky start with the apples. We had quite a bit of damage. A lot of growers reporting that they didn't have as many blossoms as they would have liked to have. And so that was a little bit stressful for many growers. Varieties like Honeycrisp were really hit by the cold temperatures in the winter. So they just, that expresses in less flowers. And that obviously means that there's going to be less fruit. However, one of the things that we always talk about is that in the case of apples, you only need around like 10 to 15% of the flowers to set a fruit to have a full crop. So even when there might have not been as many flowers as the growers would have liked to, I think we're still going to have a very good yield just because you don't need so many of them. And most of the time, and probably the hardest job on growing apples, is that we need to knock down a lot of the fruit to be able to leave enough so that the tree can grow them in a good size and a good quality. So that's in the case of apples. In the case of grapes, I think we're going to probably start around this week or next week to start them, to see them change color and start getting, you know, those blue and red colors are going to start now, and we're going to start the final stretch on gaining all those sugars that we need to be able to harvest them. We also saw quite a bit of damage on the grapes, but the grapes, one of the wonderful things about grapes is that they have sort of an insurance that if we have damage on those buds that are going to produce the shoots with the clusters, we have a second set of buds that are able to break. We call them the secondary, and they also have fruit on them. And so even though we saw a lot of damage, I think, again, we will be able to have a really good yield and good fruit this year just because we have these secondary shoots that also have fruit.
Well, Amaya, what do you love about growing fruit? What really excites you about it?
I've always loved everything related with growing plants. My family is from Chile, and they have an avocado orchard down there.
Neat.
And so I've always been sort of involved in growing fruit. Now I work on a completely different set of fruits, very different from what I was used to growing up, and growing avocados and growing citrus fruit, a lot of, you know, lemons and limes and oranges. I just love it. It has always been something that I've been interested in, and I have the great opportunity of working with all these different crops here in the state of Wisconsin. We have so many different fruit crops that we're growing, and be able to work with the growers and you know, help them and understand, you know, some of the practices, what to do, some things, and do research to try to help them, you know, have a more profitable business. It's always been a passion of mine.
Amaya, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Amaya Atucha is an assistant professor in the Department of Horticulture and the Fruit Crop Specialist with the Division of Extension at the UW-Madison. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.